Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello there, my very good friends. Andy H. Murray here from What Culture, joined by my very good friend, Andrew Pollard, for this, our WWE SmackDown review for the August 5th episode. That's last week. I should have just said that. What am I doing? In case you missed our Rampage and Battle of the Belts review earlier today, it's me and Andrew Pollard today, baby. Everyone else is not here. That's why you've got us. We'll see how it pans out during the weeks. But, you know, people take the holidays at the same time. Very selfish. If you ask me, very selfish. Apart from Wilborn, it's his birthday. We'll let him off. Anyway, remember that if you're a fan of our unique brand of wrestling nonsense, you can find us on Spotify, Apple, or just about anywhere you get your podcasts from. We do reviews, we do previews, we do roundtable discussions, interviews, and a whole lot more. Mostly for AEW and WWE, but sometimes we do dip into the wider world of wrestling as well. Anyway, SmackDown, last Friday, Triple H's first, I guess, proper one after that awkward first week where he was in charge of creative, but they still had SummerSlam to get to, so he wasn't really in charge of creative. This is his first proper show. Big picture thoughts on this show, Mr. Pollard, coming out of that Raw, which was a pretty big change from the previous week, I thought. Maybe not so much on SmackDown, I felt.
Yeah, SmackDown felt a little more in tradition to what we've seen previously from SmackDown in regards, in comparison to the shift we saw on Raw. But there were still, obviously, for me personally, there was two massive things about SmackDown. I guess technically three. But yeah, three things that came out of SmackDown. I was like, oh yes, Shayna Baszler. Thank the Lord. Lord H, Papa H. And also, obviously, a certain double act that made their return at the closing minutes. But yeah, there was enough there to keep me... keep me excited for what we're going to see going forward, hopefully, from WWE. I mean, it could all end up turning out to be complete trash, but hopefully Triple H is going to be steering this ship in a way that we can all get on board with. So yeah, no, it was a fun SmackDown. It wasn't the most eventful in some regards, but yeah, there was a couple of key parts here that were like, oh man, that's really got my attention.
Yeah, I completely agree. We'll talk about those flashes and those parts as we go through the show. Certainly really nice to be able to sit here and review a WWE weekly television show, not from the standpoint of, well, Vince is in charge, so the things that maybe we're not so fond of are never going to change. So, you know, even if these changes are a bit more gradual than a lot of people were hoping for, which we will get into probably on our Raw preview later today, it's still good to know, and it's good to have that degree of hope and that degree of optimism. I feel re-energized when it comes to this weekly product, which I haven't been able to say for a long, long time, because, you know, even when you like certain parts of it, and certainly there are things on Raw and SmackDown that I've enjoyed every single week, pretty much. Even when you enjoy a certain part of it, you know that the other parts, the downs, if you will, to put it in a What Culture parlance, are not necessarily ever going to be something that Vince McMahon, not the most reflective of dudes, is going to look at and go, oh, well, that thing I've been doing for 25 years, it's not cutting it anymore. But on to the last week's
that
show.
Voice. You get me excited for that voice. Oof.
Oh, man. Listen, I'm an underrated impression guy. I know Wilborn's the wacky voice guy, but you know, I reckon I could take him out. Happy birthday, Adam. We love you. Please come back. Yeah, I need you to do this job. You're so much better than me. We begin the show. SummerSlam recap, of course. It's Pat McAfee. It's Michael Cole in the announce booth. McAfee was so funny when he was narrating his victory over Happy Corbin, of course, at SummerSlam. talking about how he'd kicked balls his whole life. A bit of long-term storytelling coming after this match here as well with regards to that. Showing the footage of him hoofing Happy Corbin right between the legs over and over and over. We got Chance and McAfee. The guy is over as hell in the arena. In the back, Happy Corbin, he's watching the footage on the screen at the patented WWE angle. A bunch of people were laughing at him, which is just perfect. He's such a, like, his character is such a good loser. He was fuming. Ricochet stood up to him, made fun of Corbin a little bit, and boom, we have a match. Now, immediately, you're like, oh, okay. Triple H, I see what you're doing here. One of your guys, someone who was featured a lot better in NXT than he has been for the bulk of his main roster run in Ricochet, facing a main roster dude. And we had the match, and it was really good fun. Good 11 or 12 minutes to start the show. Uncharacteristic, you know. I guess technically the show did start with somebody talking, but it wasn't the usual promo train in the opener, you know. Bit different, bit of a different flavor, which we all appreciate. And they had a really good match, playing off their conflicting styles, playing off their conflicting personalities. And I mean, these guys are chalk and cheese, Ricochet and Happy Corbin, from their roots in the sport, from their philosophies towards it, from their gimmicks, from their alignments. You had a lot of stuff with Pat at ringside as well. He's just rubbing it in Corbin's face the whole match. Corbin gets distracted on a few occasions looking over, and it was one of these things that came towards the end. Corbin looking over at McAfee, who's just being a dick. I mean, like, a lovable dick, but a dick.
Yep.
He looks over, Ricochet takes advantage, crotched Corbin on the top rope. He hit the recoil and the shooting star press for the victory. Always nice to see a shooting star press. The fans popped huge. They were into this throughout, to be fair. And as he was going for the shooting star press, McAfee was saying he was going to do something that he didn't do smoothly at SummerSlam, and that was hit the move smoothly. So a nice bit of self-awareness there from Patrick McAfee afterwards. Yeah, this is why you talk about kicking balls, brother. Pat McAfee got thrown the football. He's a punter. He kicks balls. You know the deal. And he kicked one into the crowd. Send the fans home happy. Man, just as like a weekly television match, I thought this was an absolute triumph. What did you think?
Yeah, exactly. Not every match has to be that five-star, 25-minute pay-per-view main event. This was great for an opener. The two conflicting styles are great. It was good to see Ricochet get the win. I think we all could see that coming once the way the ship was steering with Pat's antics. And not just is, you talk about how good a loser Baron Corbin is, Happy Corbin is. It's like, not just is he bum ass, but he's great at showing ass. He's so good in that role. I don't know, it's cool to dump on Baron Corbin. What he is there to do, he is absolutely great at it. And yeah, just him as the dominant heel monster of Ricochet just bouncing off him. It works so well. It's a tale as old as time, but it was one that was fantastically delivered. And it's like Corbin's lost a lot lately. And it feels like this is, again, at the start of another like plummet to the depths for him. And if it is, I'm here to see that. It's like Baron Corbin. I don't know the times when I thought I'd never say this, but like, he always has me interested in what he's doing, because I mean, we saw the Riddick Moss, well, Madcap Moss, sorry, silly me calling him Riddick. The Madcap Moss stuff, when that eventually got past the, okay, it's just these goofy gimmicks, and they got to the matches, that was great for Moss. And who knows, maybe this win is the start of something for Ricochet, and the Pat McAfee issue still lingers on. Pat McAfee's just so good. Like, you talk about how entertaining he is, and like, these people, we the people, you could have Pat McAfee step from behind that announce desk during a Roman Reigns segment and him getting a ring, and people would be there for like, I'm here for Roman Reigns and Pat McAfee. That is how over this guy is right now, how entertaining he is, how much of a presence he has, the charisma. We talked on it on a previous part earlier today about, touched upon what he's done to Michael Cole, to rejuvenate Michael Cole. And Cole deserves a lot of credit as well. But yeah, man, Pat McAfee's he's the most over guy in the company, it feels like at times. Just, yeah. And this opening match was a great example of Pat, a great example of Ricochet, a great example of Corbin, of what these three can do and bring to the table.
Yeah, Corbin is so far ahead of his receding hairline biker days in NXT when he was doing the countdown gimmick with the quick jobber squashes and the spotlight and all of that stuff.
He's, yeah, him and what's he gonna do? Yeah. Oh my god, New York fella. Bull Dempsey. when it,
yes,
because they just had competitions of who could squash jobbers the quickest, and then they got their takeover match. Yeah.
The dark days that transitioned then into Bullfit and all of that stuff, which happens.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff. But he's the perfect WWE upper mid-card heel. He's a spoiler. He's good at making you really root against him, I think. Guy who genuinely rubs a lot of people the wrong way as well, which is good stuff. It's good to be invested in these characters. And look, if it means we get Corbin going off the rails again, character-wise, I am all the way here for that. I thought that era was just great television, great WWE-style television. And that's not even a qualifier. It's just a different breed. This was great. Looks like Ricochet is going to be a recipient of more under Triple H. You'd expect that. He's not a Vince guy. He's not a guy who's going to go out there and talk, you know, for 20 minutes on the microphone and be like this incredible talker or whatever, this engaging presence on the mic for that level of time. His strengths are primarily between the ropes. He is one of the most dazzling wrestlers of his generation. And you position him opposite a complementary presence like Baron, who is good at the opposite in WWE, not to undersell his in-ring, which has come along leaps and bounds as well. It's just a winning combination. And props to Triple H. This was a really good way to start the show.
Yeah, I think we're ricocheting. We saw how Triple H knows how to use it in that running NXT. Rather than give him 5 minutes of mic time, he'd have him do that ridiculous flip where he confronted Velveteen Dream, where it's like, oh my, genuinely something I don't think I've ever seen before. And that's a moment that still stands to this day, like one of like the coolest things ever seen in NXT. So Triple H gets Ricochet. And that's it. Like you said, just let the worker do the talking, not the talking do the talking. And yeah, it's, you look at it across the company, the people who would be, I don't know, kind of would be the most ecstatic at Triple H taking charge. And like Ricochet's got to be up there, man. And hopefully we see more from him and more from Baron Corbin.
Absolutely. Good stuff across the board. A really encouraging start to this show. Go backstage. Sami Zayn trying to get in the Bloodlines locker room, and he goes all the way through a commercial break. This segment, trying to get in. The Usos come out. They won't let him talk to Roman Reigns. They say Paul Heyman's not at the show tonight. He is recovering from home. Covering at home, of course, he took a tremendous bump in that SummerSlam main event. But they promised Sami Zayn, the Usos did, that later he will be able to talk to Roman Reigns. So something we will come back to later on, of course, when they revisit this storyline. But we move on. Shinsuke Nakamura, is he going to get his Intercontinental title shot? Is he going to get a shot at Michael Hamflett and that glorious belt? You know, I think he faced Ludwig Kaiser here. I think coming out of Raw, maybe the hope of this show was we look at the great job they did with the US title on Raw when they showed the video of past champions going all the way back to your Harley races and everyone else, through to the modern era with Bobby Lashley, who cut a good promo about restoring the honor of the belt. Just classic stuff. Coming out of that, maybe we hope that this episode of SmackDown would do something similar for the IC title. Perhaps not to the same level, but I think having the belt is on TV is what I'm trying to say. It's focused in a good program, and that is good stuff indeed. Especially dorks of our age, man, we have such nostalgia for this belt, for what it represented back in the day, and you know, all those SummerSlam 92 and whatever else you want to mention. But Nakamura and Ludwig Kaiser, they had a good match here. Obviously, Kaiser is kind of like a roadblock for Nakamura to get to Gunther. That was the stipulation. Nakamura wins, so him and Gunther goes on next week with some USA chants early on, which was weird because the babyface is from Japan here, friends. Not sure what was going on there, but it didn't catch on, which was nice. Nakamura recovered from some early offense from Kaiser, rocked him with a running knee. We progress. Kaiser is in total control later on, but Nakamura catches him with an armband. No, we're not swimming, Andy, you moron.
That wasn't on Jericho's list back in the day. I saw the armband.
No, it certainly wasn't. And there were no moss-covered 300 family Gudunzas in this match either. But Nakamura hit the Kinshasa for the win after Ludwig Kaiser had broken free from that armbar. Andy, Nakamura gets the IC title match. Him and Gunther went face-to-face after the bell. Kind of what you'd expect from this, a good solid TV match between guys who know the hell what they're doing, and theoretically a good challenge for Walter. Gunther!
Yeah, Gunther. We have to get that right still. It's just two good workers working a good TV match, and it is the biggest take-home is that Shinsuke Nakamura versus Gunther is coming up, and that's something that I'm looking forward to. I think that's on TV next week on SmackDown, but even if that was to happen at Clash of the Castle, if obviously it's not like WWE would always do just one and done matches, there could be shenanigans, but if we were to get that match at Clash, as someone's going to be there, I would be very happy to see it. But no, it's coming out of SummerSlam. I really, really enjoy SummerSlam from top to bottom, but my one slight beef was no IC title match. If you're trying to make that feel like a big deal, that needs to be on, especially the big tempo premium live events, and at least pay-per-views. But I enjoyed this match. It was fine for what it was. I think we knew exactly what was going to happen, and I was hoping that was going to happen because it was going to lead to Nakamura versus Gunther. And that, if given time, if these guys are allowed to do what they can do best, that could be a really special TV match.
Yeah, I completely agree. We'll hopefully see more from the IC title going forward. I hope they give them a big chunk of TV next week. A renewed focus on the mid-card titles is something that a lot of people have wanted for a long, long time, ourselves included, for so long. They've just been these MacGuffins that exist, and they're kind of passed around without much rhyme or reason. So following on from the US title that we will talk about on today's Raw preview, because there's a big match, of course, coming up tonight. Yeah. Hopefully they can do something similar with the IC title. It's early days, but I think Triple H is someone who respects the history of these things, is probably going to be likelier to do that than Vince. They're doing some good stuff here. I think the presentation of Gunther on the main roster has been really solid so far.
Yeah.
Say what you will about red trunks and whatever. I think that's superficial. I don't think it matters too much. They've done a good job of presenting him probably, as the closest version of himself that you can expect on this lens. They're not going to have him go on TV and make, ground beef of people's chests necessarily. It's a PG show. It's big budget. It's Fox. It's whatever. But he's been very close to that, and I think that's to his and WWE's credit. And I think it'll be even better with Triple H as well.
And I think now we talk about renewed focus on the secondary titles. I think you have not just the Triple H factor and the lack of Vince McMahon, but it's like this is the perfect time because everybody's talking about Clash at the Castle coming up, the big UK show, first big stadium UK show in 30 years. We've got the 30th anniversary of SummerSlam 1992, which was a pay-per-view headlined by one of the greatest Intercontinental title matches of all time. It's like this is where you go back to that. It's 30 years since that title meant such a massive... I mean, it's obviously made... It's become a bigger thing in the years after that before it dropped off a cliff. But just it all ties together so nicely that you can just use all that history, this convenient anniversary, the UK return, to put that title in a really big, important spot on the Clash at the Castle card. And I'm not sure what you do with it. I just want to see that in a special place. Maybe it is Nakamura running back with Gunther, but that needs to be heavily focused at the premium live event. You like to have faith in Trips to do that.
As a
student of the game. Yeah, and a historian. And like you said, what he did, the US package that they put together, like how easy was that? It's a 5-minute, I'm sure one of those, what, Adam or whatever his name is behind the scenes, the redhead kid that Shawn Michaels talked about his Hall of Fame speech. I'm sure it took them a little while to put that together, but like a 5-minute, not even that, 3-minute video package. And all of a sudden that belt that's been iffy over the years means more than it's meant in a long old time, which is that something that Triple H didn't need to do that. Vince McMahon could have easily done that. But hey, it just shows like 3 minutes of TV and you can make a title all of a sudden feel a lot more relevant. And yeah, I think the IC titles, it's on a good guy to carry it, and I think it's in a good position moving forward. And I look forward to it. Yeah, the whole Gunther presentation as well, like you said. It's yes, okay, there's a name change, there's a red trunks, there's the music change, but it fits because of the shape the dude's got. I mean, it's almost like two different people. It's like it works really well because you put Walter next to Gunther, and it's like, these guys brothers, Is one of them Hamlet? it's just the change of presentation at the time means it was more palatable to take these changes to the character, the name, the music, the trunks, and he's still at the end of the day the same worker. Like you said, you're not going to get the ground beef chest chops on weekly television. You'll get them on premium live events, so that's fine.
Yeah, exactly. I'm in the exact same space with it, and I'm looking forward to seeing what comes next. We went backstage. No, we didn't. We started off by recapping recent events between the new vicious Viking Raiders and the New Day. A little highlight of Xavier Woods getting injured, leading to this week's goings-on. Megan Morant interviewed Kofi Kingston backstage. He said that Woods is doing well, he's recovering at home, and he promised to get revenge for his fallen partner. We then went over to Sami Zayn again, that rascal. Knock, knock, knocking on the Bloodline's door. He didn't get a text from the Usos. Jimmy and Jay said they were going to text him, and they did not. Oh, what? You can't trust those guys, man. He tried to get to Roman again. That was the deal. You know how this dynamic works. The Usos said, hey, Sami Zayn, how about you take over Paul Heyman's job tonight? How about you take care of Roman's ring entrance? So Sami was a little, he wasn't really up for that, but he eventually agreed. He glared and they walked off. Yeah, Sami Zayn's doing a good job. He's such a runt, his character. Yeah. He's a good guy to suck up to these top guys.
Yeah, he's such a willing victim in all of this, where it's like, I'll just go and give him a knock because they said they'll text me, but maybe there's bad signal in the building. Like, just he's that, I guess, almost like Stockholm syndrome in the way where he's making excuses for them. Like, maybe they have no signal, maybe their batteries died, whatever. Maybe they're stuck somewhere. It's just he's facilitating the abuse that he's getting from them. And it's, I mean, if down the line this leads to the return of babyface Sami Zayn, consider me happy. But for now, he is great as the slimy runt who's just desperate for a bit of relevancy on the aisle of relevancy. By latching onto the popularity, the status, the power of the Bloodline. And I think the Usos were great in this role as well. It's like almost the cock blockers between Sami and Roman Reigns. But it's just like, yeah, no, we're and stringing them, just giving them enough to keep him stringing along. Yeah, Sami's great in this, man. I think Sami's great at whatever he does, to be honest.
Yeah, he does a tremendous job. He's really leapt into this character as well. I think, you know, at one point when he first turned, a lot of us were quite reluctant, given his history in WWE as the pure-hearted babyface, and his history before that as El Generico. But yeah, I mean, the guy is an essential TV character in this company, one of the most entertaining guys there, and he's going to kill everything he does. We had a segment from the SmackDown Women's Champion, Liv Morgan, after this. She, of course, overcame Ronda Rousey at the Premium Live event, but there was a little bit of controversy. The finish was, of course, pin, while Ronda was tapping Liv out to the armbar. So Ronda, of course, is suspended indefinitely. It's a storyline suspension with a fine for attacking Liv and the referee after the bell. So Liv is in the ring. Her arm is in a sling. That's a nice rhyme. Totally unintentional. Kayla Braxton goes over the finish, goes over everything. Poor Liv, she got booed. She got you tapped out chance. She said that the only reason she tapped out was because she thought the referee had already counted three. The fans booed that again. So a tough night at the office here for Liv. This fed into what was to come, the gauntlet match to crown her next number one contender. We'll get to that in just a second. Just to explore some big picture thoughts on Liv as SmackDown Women's Champion, I thought it was quite encouraging that when she won the belt, we got these reports of how well her merch was shifting all of a sudden and the reaction she was getting at house shows and stuff. But I will say that, you know, if you present your babyface champion having this crowning glory of winning the belt, first of all, by shortcutting and taking advantage of a tired opponent who'd already wrestled a match, that's never ideal. You're not putting them off on good babyface footing. And then when you get to the second match and you have the opportunity to right that by having her win through a different means, you give her this kind of banana skin where she tapped out and it's disputed. Yeah, you're not really doing a lot to endear the crowd to her there. So for me, maybe the crowd's reception was a little bit harsh, but I think, you know, you pay your ticket, you can do what you want as long as it's not offensive and disrespectful and disgusting. I think it's kind of a reflection of the way she's been booked on television, at least.
No, I totally agree. The Money in the Bank briefcase itself, the whole concept of that is it's tailored for a heel. It's a heel maneuver. That's why the baby faces that really succeed with it, you look at John Cena and Rob Van Dam, where they announced ahead of time their cash-ins, because they're all smiling, granny-kissing, baby-hugging baby faces, not going to take the shortcut of just like, oh, that guy or girl has been beaten down for 20 minutes and they've just about got through this long battle. Oh, yeah, I'm going to slide in and take that title off him, which is effectively what Liv did. And like you said, they could have righted that wrong by having just handling the next match between the two differently, but it was. And I think the way that, okay, Liv taps out, but then in her promo on SmackDown, she talks about like, well, I only tapped out because I thought that the ref had counted three. It's like, well, so you're still a bit of a quitter then, really.
Yeah.
And like, you weren't fighting through that. You weren't struggling on. It's like, no, and I think for me, the bigger talking point, the more interesting point is we've seen over the years, God damn it, man, we've seen so many times where a crowd reacts the opposite to how a character's being presented. And Vince McMahon, WWE, just double down. Roman Reigns is that prime example, clearly. But we've had so many times where the audience, the WWE universe, you have a voice, but you don't really. Now it's under different stewardship. So if this carries on, this sort of reaction for Liv carries on this week's SmackDown and maybe the week after in different cities, does Triple H maybe look at that and go like, hey, well, the fans are treating her as a heel. Maybe we look at some sort of character switch-up. And then how do the fans react when Ronda does eventually come back? Because she was in traditional Wrexham. Wrexham, yes, we're talking about Wrexham today. Just casually throwing that in. In the traditional wrestling historical sense, Ronda Rousey post-match was very much being framed as a heel. And so does the crowd react to Ronda as the screwed-over babyface? Is Liv Morgan the sly, sinister, underhand, calculating heel? Does Liv reveal that like this whole babyface, well, act has just been a facade, and yeah, she did whatever it took to get the title off somebody like Ronda Rousey, who on paper she should not be beaten. So I'm interested to see how they go forward character-wise with Liv after this, and if, of course, it could just be a one-off from that crowd, and you know, she could be getting cheered out of the building on this coming Friday. But yeah, it's an interesting one. And you saw Kayla Braxton with the look of disgust, and she put herself on Twitter about how she was disgusted in how the crowd reacted to Liv. But again, like you said, it's people paying the money. As long as they're not being disrespectful, spouting hateful garbage or whatever, if a crowd's just booing somebody, that's their right.
Yeah.
And again, it's more testament to how she's being positioned and framed rather than the work that Liv Morgan's put in. Because nobody can say she's not put the hard work in over the years and the hard yards, and she's so shown vast improvement. But it's more just how she's been framed. What are we cheering her for? She got the cash in, which again is a natural heel maneuver, and then she had the cop out win where she actually tapped out. So why should we as an audience cheer her for that?
Yeah. Precisely. I think it's going to be the first big listen and adjust moment of Triple H's tenure, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he does with it. It's clear that if she's going to continue as a babyface, well, we need to not portray her as such a, for lack of better word, loser. Even in these winning situations. So strong win necessary for Liv, I feel, coming up. And that'll be a challenge, given that who prospered from this gauntlet match. So I'll just go through all of these stages relatively quickly, because they were really quick themselves. Sonya Deville interrupted Liv Morgan's segment with Kayla Braxton. She said, "You shouldn't be the champion, blah, blah, blah." A couple of fans cheered at this, as was the theme of the segment. Sonya mocked Adam Pearce, said she was going to win the gauntlet match, and she started off against Aaliyah. Really short, compact stuff here. This lasted about 2 minutes. Morgan was at ringside for the duration, and we got a Ronda Rousey chant at one point. It was interesting. So the first phase of this is Sonya Deville. She overcomes Aaliyah relatively easily. She hits a crossbody off the second for a near fall. Sorry, Aaliyah hits a crossbody off the second for a near fall. Deville recovers, pins her for the win. Sonya advances to then face Raquel Rodriguez, who had the kind of monster run through this gauntlet. She ended up defeating Sonya relatively easily. Again, about 2 minutes here. It was a chop block from Sonya trying to take advantage. Good heel stuff. And then a Vader bomb into an elbow drop from Rodriguez. She followed up with a powerbomb for the pin. Out came Shotzi. She lasted a minute and a half. Thank you for coming. Good work if you can get it. It was the Vader bomb, elbow, and the powerbomb again getting the fall there. After that, Natalya, the veteran. Is she going to do better? She's been around for ages. Look at who she's wrestled. 2 minutes and 20 seconds, according to my notes here. Natalya's approach was to go after the knee, which has, of course, been worked over with the chop block and whatever, whatever. She went for some submissions, but she had no chance whatsoever. Raquel was steamrolling these poor people. She recovered, hit the powerbomb again for the win. So Raquel summoning her inner Wardlow with powerbomb after powerbomb after powerbomb, putting in a very good account of herself. That leaves one person. Who's the last person you want to end a match like this against? Well, you've already got a sore knee. It's the submission magician. It's Shayna Baszler, somebody who you think would be a recipient of a big push in the Triple H era. This kind of started during a commercial, but when we came back, Shayna was in control. She's going after the leg. It's good psychology. It's straightforward pro wrestling stuff. And then she went to the arm. She looked over at Morgan, trying to send a message. Baszler went for the Kirifuda clutch, but Raquel avoided that. She went for the Vader bomb elbow again. Baszler got the Kirifuda clutch. Raquel broke free. So some good drama towards the end of this fall. But then Baszler, she rolled her up. You know, Raquel was already softened up for the win. No tapping out. Nothing like that. They didn't go for that finish, which they could have done with a leg lock or whatever if they wanted to. But hey, here we are. It's Liv Morgan versus Shayna Baszler as things stand for Clash at the Castle. And afterwards, they had a bit of a stare down. Your thoughts on Shayna Baszler ascending here, getting the win, challenging Liv at Clash at the Castle?
Oh, I loved it. Absolutely loved it. Not necessarily the match, but I love the concept of now we're coming out of this show. Shayna Baszler is the number one contender for that SmackDown Women's title. It's unfortunate because I don't think she's going to win at Clash of the Castle. Obviously, we've got a few weeks to get there because it's clearly being geared up for Ronda Rousey to return and get some. Is it redemption, revenge? I don't know, on Liv Morgan. But I like the fact that Shayna Baszler is being made to feel like a big deal, even though she came in last. But again, that folds into the character. She is a heel. And it's like you mentioned there about how it was the perfect position to put her when you've got the weakened giant who you've got the submission magician, as her name is. The nickname is, who just comes in and exploits the situation she's in to get the win. I thought the winning sequence was, I think it was really clever in conception. I think it was executed a little bit clunkily, but hey, I can let him off with that. And you protect Raquel because she's gone through whatever, five girls to get to where she is. These gauntlets, because a lot of the time they tend to happen on Raw, and obviously Raw's got a lot more time to play with, so you end up with like Seth Rollins running the gauntlet for an hour, whereas this was condensed into about 20 minutes, I think, and it was, as you pointed out, they're all 2-minute squashes, especially when Raquel got in there. It's like, oh, right, okay, but the person coming in is fresh, especially when Natty came in. I thought Natty might have got like, you know, maybe 5 minutes, but it's like, no, it doesn't matter that she's I think she is the official last graduate of the Heart Dungeon. It doesn't matter of that and her veteran status and again, her submission skills, she's just getting 2 minutes as well, brother. But yeah, the match wasn't all that much to write home about. But the key thing for me coming out of it is that Shayna Baszler is hopefully going to be positioned as a big deal, especially these next few weeks on TV. If you just have a dominating Liv week after week, then again, that only re-emphasizes the whole fact that Liv Morgan is very much the undersized babyface in all of this. So when she gets a big win at Clash, it means a little bit more. And Ronda coming back.
Yeah, you're dead right about the format. Gauntlets are tricky unless you're going to do the Seth Rollins thing where the match goes like 2 hours or whatever. You know, it's very difficult to fit them into TV, but with that comes the realism aspect of just squash, 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 squash. It can be tricky. Difficult balancing act across the board. So the problems are quite there, front and center. And for me, the two biggest takeaways would be that, yep, Raquel had a reason for losing here. She'd been through a bunch of different people and she had an injured knee. And then she had to face Shayna Baszler and, of course, Shayna's victory. I wonder if maybe we might see the start of perhaps a Ronda Rousey Shayna Baszler alliance on screen, if it ties into the Clash match when Ronda is going to come back presumably and be out for blood. That would be cool because they have that personal history together. So there's a lot of options to play with here in this women's division. Interesting, the lack of Lacey Evans in this match and on this show.
Yeah,
So Fightful Select came through with a report over the weekend talking about how chaotic and like unorganized her creative has been, and that's been reflected on air. So some interesting questions to ask about her future in the division. But yeah, man, never going to complain about seeing Shayna Baszler on top. I'm a big fan. I loved her NXT title reign. I think she's awesome. And if there's anyone that's going to push her, it is going to be Triple.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast. Alongside my good friend, John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
From there, we move on to Sami Zayn again. Here he is backstage. He's at the Bloodline's door. He's done everything that the Usos asked, and they still wouldn't let him talk to Roman Reigns. This guy, he's getting played like a fiddle here, and he doesn't even realize it. He gets a bit annoyed. The Usos shout at him. They told him he needed to start pulling his weight or take that shirt off. So. Here we go. Still got that bubbling away. One day we're going to get babyface Sammy versus heel Roman, and it's going to be wonderful. Hopefully. Maybe.
Yeah. Or maybe, I know, obviously, depending on how Triple H is going to treat the brand split, maybe this is all going to be babyface Sammy with babyface KO taking those titles from the Usos. I'd be all for that. But yeah, you I don't think that'd be great if done well. Hey, if it's done at Clash of the Castle, I'd be very happy to see that match.
Yes.
But I think the greater picture as well, as you mentioned there, the culmination of all of this, whether he wins or loses, there has to be that big singles match, and not just a convoluted TV match that's full of shenanigans. There needs to be a big 15-20 minute match between Sami Zayn and Roman Reigns at some point down the line. Maybe they take the tag titles on the way to getting there, but it's a story that all the people involved, they've managed to keep this entertaining, even though it's been going on for months by this point in time. And it does feel like we're in the end game, brother. It feels like we're nearly there. And yeah, it's interesting to see how things go. What's the final straw that makes Sammy kind of wake up to all of this? If it is a babyface turn, what babyface Sami Zayn looks like in 2022? Because I think it's, 4 years, maybe 5 years he's been heel now?
Yeah.
And it's like, there's so many other like little kind of tiny questions, like, does he have the shaved head again? Do they have the shorter hair? Does that horrible ratty mullet go, which obviously plays so well as that hero character? Does his gear change back up? Do we get the full scar dancing Sami Zayn, who was just such an engaging, entertaining presence to watch all the time in NXT? And even on the main roster initially. Yeah, it's a situation in wrestling that's got me very excited, very interested in it, very invested in it. And that's testament to all that have been involved in this over the and I like it as well that they kept Paul off TV, which is,
yes,
that's good. Yeah, that's to have Paul Heyman off TV and to have Sammy to kind of be the pseudo wise man almost for now.
Yeah, exactly. It's sell the beatdown, baby. You got to sell stuff like this. It's frustrating when something major happens on a Sunday or a Saturday, and then by the next Friday, everything is well, and everyone's, bopping around and stuff. It's just, Yeah, well, the kind of things that reward you for paying attention. Just don't insult people's logic. Don't treat them like idiots, basically. Paul Heyman is not a wrestler, and so when he takes a bump like this, he should be in great deals of pain. Right, we're going to... What I'll do for this next segment, it all fits together, so I'll recap the lot of it, and then we'll go into our thoughts on it in general. But the Viking Raiders, the new vicious Viking Raiders, of course... have a squash match. They face Tommy Gibson and Jim Mulkey. Good to see a Mulkey on Pro Wrestling TV.
Yes.
40 years later. But yeah, this was a one-sided pounding, as you'd expect. Ivar gave Gibson, I think it was. He gave him a slam. And then Mulkey ate the double powerbomb on top of Gibson for the win. Shades of the offers of pain there in their old finish. But afterwards, Kofi Kingston comes down. He comes after them with a kendo stick. Fans loving Kofi. He clears the ring. We get Kofi and Eric going one-on-one. Short match. It's about 4 minutes. Postman Pierce made it during the break. We come back and Eric is kicking Kofi in the face. He's rocking him. He's slowing it down. We get a chin lock. Then a comeback from Kofi. Crossbody for the two count. Kofi went for the SOS. Eric slammed him for a near fall. Follow up with the full Nelson into the knee. Kofi recovers, sends Eric out of the ring to ringside. We get the trust fall. Ivar tries to hit Kofi with Kofi's own kendo stick. You damn Ivar. But he missed. Back in the ring, Kofi rolls Eric up for the sudden win. Bit of a banana skin. This was, okay, so across the board, probably the most Vince thing that happened on this show. I think you get the one match rolling into another aspect of Postman Pierce making this thing after Kingston made the save following the squash, and then of course you get the banana skin loss with the distraction and the outside interference going wrong. And you know, it's not my preferred style of booking. I don't subscribe to the idea that these roll-ups protect people. I think that we've been going through so many years of them now that for me, it's more likely to elicit an eye roll. It's kind of a tire trope. And for me, kind of disappointing that this happened on this show, because yes, it's week-to-week TV. Yes, you can't give away decisive finishes all of the time. But for a clean break from Vince booking into Triple H booking, I would have preferred if they'd done this a little differently.
Yeah, I agree totally. There was the whole roll-up that just always annoyed me. It is very much a Vinceism, as is the match being made on the fly, which is one of my only nitpick with the opening match was like, oh, right, Ricochet and Corbin getting into it backstage and they're having a match right away. Well, what was supposed to open SmackDown? Like, what was supposed to be in this spot now? And I think with this match, you very much could have got... you could have done a clean win for Kofi. This is a guy who's a former world champion against, okay, it was only a squash match but they'd just been through, but the Viking Raiders had just had a match and they're going up against someone who's proven in singles competition, has a healthy world championship reign under his belt. There's no reason really to me why Kofi didn't get the win here, and then you can have a post-match beat down and get some heat back. It's, yeah, it just felt a little unnecessary and just felt very much same old that we've become accustomed to over the last however many years.
Yeah, absolutely. But the feud continues. You'd imagine culminating in a big match between these gentlemen and their respective partners. And we close the night on, Karrion Kross, he's back, and Scarlett with him too. So Roman Reigns, we've been building to this segment the whole night. He comes down. He's talking about Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre, of course, is the number one contender to the undisputed WWE Universal Championship after beating Sheamus in the Donnybrook. Sorry. The good old-fashioned Donnybrook last week. Bloodline come out. 5-minute ring entrance. You know the drill. It's good. It's a good time. Reigns demanded South Carolina acknowledge him. Everyone popped. Everyone's into this act. It's good. You love to see it. He's here to brag about winning at SummerSlam. Yada, yada, yada. He spoke about Brock Lesnar, saying that he hates Brock Lesnar because he tried to kill the wise man, in a line that popped me quite huge. Put out the prayers for Paul, and out comes Drew McIntyre with the inevitable interruption. He said that he can't wait until Clash at the Castle. He wants to fight now. I can do those impressions because I'm of
you can do those.
I'm of his extraction. That's when Karrion Kross's music hits. And it's interesting. I think there was a bit of confusion in the building at the time because maybe, you know, it's the music is big and it's bombastic, but it doesn't really start off that way. So when it hits, it's not something you're immediately going to go boom. It's not got this explosive sting. It's a build. It's a slow building thing, but it comes on. You see Scarlett standing against the video screen, and you've got the time aspect of it all. She's there to serve as a distraction. Drew is looking up the ramp. Karrion Kross comes from behind, head of hair, leather jacket, beats up Drew, sends him into the steps, and then the crowd realize who it is, and they get into it a little bit. This culminates in Kross and Scarlett. They put the hourglass down on the ring. TikTok Roman Reigns, hello, you're the champion. We're here. We're going to cause a ruckus. They pose, Kross and Scarlett do, and that's the end of SmackDown. So Triple H obviously bringing one of his guys back through the door. From the moment Karrion Kross was signed with WWE, it was reported that he was going to get fast-tracked. He was going to get the big promotion, the big push under Triple H. Unfortunately, Vince got his hands on that. Of course, we know about the main roster run where he was dressed up like the second coming of Kwang, mixed with the fourth member of Demolition that no one wanted, the third, let alone the fourth, that nobody wanted. It didn't go to plan.
Careful what you say about Crush, brothers.
Listen, Kona Crush, give me it all day. Yes. Demolition Crush, maybe not so much. Shouts to those old superstars vignettes, the Crush stuff, where the gimmick was literally, I'm a guy who crushes things. Live the gimmick, yeah. My friend.
I'm Hawaiian, Shaka, brother. Yeah,
just tremendous.
Little hand thing. Yeah.
Love that era. But we all do. Karrion Kross back in WWE, probably the most Triple H moment of the night in terms of it being one of his people thrust into the forefront. And now we've got talk that this may be a USA Network motivated move where that network wants a big title on Raw. So maybe they're going to split up the belts. Maybe they're going to give one to Kross and he's going to go to Raw. Maybe Drew and Roman are going to mix it up with the other one. Who knows? For now, we still have Drew versus Roman set for Clash at the Castle. There might be some stuff with Kross going on, but something that inspired a lot of debate over the weekend, this angle. So I'm very eager to get your thoughts on this, Mr. Pollard.
Oh, my thoughts were, I absolutely loved it. Unequivocally loved this. It popped me big time. It was one of those moments where you watch it and it's like, and it's like, there's so many bits, like so the cogs keep turning because like there's the music. And like you said, it's a very slow build music. It's very slow as it gets going. And so it's like, it gives you a second of like, is that? And then you see the back of a petite female figure on the stage is like, nah, that isn't good. Is that Scott? And then you see the bird on the Titantron or the entrance, whatever they call that thing now, the video wall. And it's like, and just as you realize, like, this is Karrion Kross, you're waiting for him. And then he comes from nowhere, like you said, with the hair, with a leather jacket, so very different to how he's been presented the last time we saw him on WWE television. And the dude suits the hair as well, to be fair. He's a very good looking man. It's like, if people have been keeping up with him, obviously not the Control Your Narrative guff, because that is just guff. But what he's been
rest
up to...
Rest in peace, well, Control Your Narrative.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, they've still got Adam Schur. Yay. But no, it was... Kross has been... The matches I've seen of him during his time away, the match with Davey Boy Smith Jr. At Ric Flair's final match. Like, the guy's been keeping himself active. He looks like a million bucks anyway. He looks like a movie star with hair. I'm just happy to see him back. And not just back, but... Clearly, the intentions that Triple H have laid out there by having him come back in that segment involved with those talents, the two people who are set to headline the next premium live event, one of which is the person who's held a title for about 1,065 million days, it feels like, in Roman Reigns. But just this is the reward you have of having Roman on a run like this. Yes, okay, there's lots of people he's beaten along the way, and there's that argument to it. But then when you mix people in with him, it's like, right, well, all of a sudden, just because of the run Roman Reigns has been on, by Karrion Kross breathing that same air, it's like, wow, there, Karrion Kross is a big deal instantly, immediately. And whether that's to take one of those titles to Raw, that's rumblings we've heard, because USA Network rightly want a world title on their programming, because it's all well and good if you're putting both world titles on one person, but then if you're the network, you want that person to appear on your show. And Roman Reigns doesn't work Mondays, brother. So I think whether that's the end game for Crossfall, the initial end game, whether it's a case of he's some sort of roadblock for Drew until Clash of the Castle, who knows? Whether it is a case of he gets involved and it's a triple threat. And either way, it got me excited. It got me talking. It popped me in a really big way, especially because Fridays are my days off and I've not been on the internet all day. So I believe there were reports of like Karrion Kross maybe returning to WWE. And some reports later on of like, yeah, he might be returning like really soon. So I'd seen none of this. So this was totally from left field for me. And I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, I think Kross is a really interesting case. I think, so full disclosure, for me, my taste, I wasn't hugely into him in NXT, I think, not necessarily through any fault of his own. It was just like, he's not really a guy who should have things like that 20-minute main event he had with Keith Lee. I think he should be a bulldozer. And when they tried to fit him into that blueprint, it was a bit like, okay, not necessarily a super worker kind of dude, which is fine because there should be room for all kinds of workers in wrestling. I'm a Satnam Singh guy. We established that earlier. But it was a bit like they did that, and then they had Adam Cole just do that promo where he just killed him on the microphone, and it was like, oh, God, what's going on here? So I've never really bought all the way into his hype train for me personally, but that's a taste thing at the end of it, and I'm certainly not going to be the guy who sits here and goes, this is going to suck, and shoot something down before it's even started here on the main roster, because obviously his presentation on the main roster last time was far from ideal, straight up terrible across the board. This was much more in line with how you should present the guy, and I thought this was an effective angle. I thought it was very well done. It was exactly what you said it was. It was a case of just slowly building to the moment where he struck, and when he did, it was right on the money. It wasn't, you know, this complete destruction of Drew. It was like just a sudden sting that caught Drew off guard, and he's immediately saying, hey, Roman Reigns, he planted his flag immediately and went, Roman, you're the big guy. Well, I'm a pretty big guy too. Let's do big guy stuff. I completely agree, you know, removing lots of previous versions of this character completely. I think this was a good reintroduction, and you know, I'm looking forward to giving this a chance. I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do in this main event spotlight, because I don't think you really know what someone's capable of in that area until you give it a try. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work, and we'll find something else for the guy to do. But I hope that lessons have been learned from Vince's gimpery, shall we say, with Cross's presentation. And there we go. Exciting things across the board, I think. It was a newsworthy way to close the show. Sometimes you just want that. You just want someone to talk about. And we've had a lot to talk about here. So do you have any more thoughts on this show, or shall we bring it home?
I think that's kind of it. But just to kind of follow on from your last comments, I think it is with Cross. He's one of those talents where the key to him is the presentation. He's not that super worker. He's not, as he's shown, he's not the sort of talent where you can go in there and have those, I guess, the classic 20-minute five-star takeover matches that we're accustomed to from Adam Cole, from Johnny Gargano, from Ciampa, from Andrade El Idolo. Those guys who set that benchmark, and of what an of Finn Balor, of going back to Pac and Sami Zayn, just that benchmark NXT set where it was always those high-quality workers. Even, like, I know some people didn't quite like him, but Bobby Roode, when he was there, it was a different style. It was a more methodical style, but they were those slower paced matches where it was all about the time given and making the most of that time. But Rude told his story a different way to Adam Cole, Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa. And so then the habit was we expected 20-minute main events that were just full of false finishes by the time that Cross got there. And it's like, he's not that kind of guy. He's not a good worker as a Johnny Gargano, as an Adam Cole, as a Ciampa. But if he's the classic professional wrestling star where it's like, it is about the look. It shouldn't always be about the look, but with him, he's got the look. He's got, especially, they got it so right in NXT, that presentation with the entrance, with the slow build, with Scarlett, with the smoke, with just his look. And then once all of that's stripped away from him, yeah, he's not the greatest worker, but they stripped that away from him on WWE, all the good stuff, then handed him some really naff stuff. Had him losing like 2 minutes to Jeff Hardy in his debut. It's like, yeah, dead in the water. So I think, yeah, I'm not expecting Cross to go out and have five-star bangers with Roman. But I think he's every inch a main event star if you handle him correctly and how you present him. And you've got a full faith, I guess, in Trips to know how to work with a talent like that and know his strengths, know his weaknesses.
Absolutely. So we'll see how things pan out for Mr. Cross, but an encouraging first night back on the job, I think. And hey, listen, I started this show by going, a little bit disappointed by this, a little let down by the lack of swooping changes compared to Raw. But you know what? After reflecting this content, I'm feeling a little bit better about it myself. So hey, here we go. It's a new era, baby. Thank you so much again for joining us here today for your SmackDown review. Remember, you can catch our feed on whatever app you use, your podcasts, however you catch up with them, whatever aggregator. We're going to be there, baby. We're everywhere. You can follow us on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE, where you can also find Andrew Pollard at
WhatCultureLeftPeg.
And you can find me at Andy H. Murray. The H stands for, I haven't really thought of one, but Habanero, I guess. We'll be back later today with the Raw preview. And we'll see you later. Goodbye. Peace.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.